Hey, this is Dominique Henderson, your CFP on YouTube, helping you jumpstart your career in financial services. As always, I'm bringing to you fresh ideas from a recently aired video on my YouTube channel, which you can find at www.youtube.com/theYouTubeCFP. Do me a favor, my friend, and text me at 214-699-7599 with any questions you might have from this show so I can help you along your journey in becoming a successful financial professional. Again, that number is 214-699-7599. All right, let's hop into today's topic. Hey there, everybody. Dominique Henderson, your CFP on YouTube. Got another Conversations in Finance today with my friend and colleague, Dave Dissel of the Model FA. Dave, when he's not running marathons, is the president of the Model FA. He's had a really great career as a financial advisor. Now he coaches financial advisors. And I brought Dave on because he has such an interesting perspective when it comes to looking at the career path of a financial advisor. Having done it before and now coaching people, he brings such great insight into that. But before we dived into some of the great topics that we talked about in this conversation, I had to begin with Dave's money story and how he got into the industry. This is what he had to say.
So it was, my parents always had like the most love to give, just not the most money to give.
And, I hear you.
So I went to high school in just outside of Boston, Mass, called St. John's Prep, all boys Catholic school, and it cost a decent chunk of change to get there. And between my parents and my grandparents, were able to send me, and so I first got exposed to, oh wow, like, this is how some people live, right? Up here, and you go visit them at their houses, and it's like, okay, we're gonna hang out at your house.
Yeah.
That was my first exposure to like, oh, there's something more than what I'm used to, because I was just used to that, and you know, I was happy, right? Yeah. In terms of a financial advisor that I was exposed to, not really. Okay. I just, thought through, helping people, thought through earning my own income, thought through knowing what to do with my income. And I was like, that seems like a good fit. And then it was just, luck as I submitted my resume through our career portal and a recruiter from Northwestern had reached out. And that's how I linked up with Northwestern specifically. So I got in actually my senior year of college. So I started with Northwestern's internship program. But before that, I knew I wanted to be a financial advisor, right? I went to school for finance. I minored in psychology. So I wanted to understand the numbers, wanted to understand the people. Why I chose to be an advisor is because I grew up super blue collar background. Family was never really good with their money from a planning standpoint. And I was like, well, if I can learn how to help, people like that and my family specifically. And if I can gain the knowledge, because I wasn't given that growing up, so that I can set myself up financially in a successful way. And because there was unlimited income potential, it kind of checks both of those boxes to redefine what success is for my family, but then also know what the heck to do with it when there is wealth to be able to manage and invest. So those are the two reasons why I got into it and then started, like I said, with Northwestern's internship program.
Now, if you've been watching this channel for a while, you know that I've been in the industry for some time, and I know firms like Northwestern Mutual often can get a bad rap for the products they sell. But like I like to say, it's hardly ever the product, it's always the person. So I wanted Dave to talk about that. I wanted him to talk about the Northwestern culture and kind of set the record straight, and this is what he had to say.
So I've yet to come across, and in my role now, I come across a bunch of different organizations and firms and types of setups from independents all the way through the Northwesterns of the world. And I have yet to come across an organization that has the ability to teach or identify and teach grit and hard work and teach people how to overcome their fears. And they have an unbelievable sales training. It's very structured. So you have that entrepreneurial upside of building a business, but you also have a structure on how to get there. What I would say is that they're, part of the reason why they go after and recruit, college students, right, for their internship program, which their internship program is one of the best in the industry, is because we're moldable, right? They can create us into the avatar that they want to represent their company. Yeah. And what I would say is that it's great if the advisor can be aware in those scenarios and still be themselves, use their guidance to help catapult them. But when they get drunk off the Kool-Aid, that's when the sales metrics and the sales targets and those types of goals can cloud their judgment sometimes on working with clients. So if you maintain your values, your morals, then it's an unbelievable setup to teach you how to, sell financial products and teach you how to, go out and talk with a lot of people, right? So like in the independent space, I've come across people where they're like, I would love to keep 5 meetings a week. At Northwestern, you keep a minimum of 15 meetings a week, right? So there's like this
work ethic,
massive disconnect. But I have nothing but good things to say about Northwestern. 94% of the time, right? There's always room to improve and things to change, but their foundational knowledge that they give their new advisors is uncomparable compared to other firms that I've come across.
In this industry, there are a few different personality types, but I like to boil them down to the rainmaker, the person that brings the business in. Then you have that service advisor that's really good, client-facing, front-facing, able to, kind of keep the relationships going. And then you have those operational support staff people, all very important cogs in this machine called client experience. But Dave had an interesting perspective on how each of those roles play into the business, and more importantly, the significance of personal development in finding out which role suits you the best. This is what he had to say.
I would say it all started when I really took a liking to personal development and read books, or listened to books, I should say, and listened to podcasts that were outside of the financial planning industry. So I wasn't over-rotating and only consuming that information. And then you can theorize, you can say, yeah, that kind of sounds like me, right? Or maybe it doesn't sound like me or whatever. And but until you actually go and try to be a business development person, try to be a service person, you don't actually know what's going to light you up inside. So for me, if someone put me in a room and said, hey, your job is to crunch financial plans, that may invigorate someone. I'll scrape my eyeballs out. Like I need to be front facing. I need to be having conversations. I need to be going out and meeting new people. I can't be stuck behind that desk. I wouldn't have known that if I didn't, do all of those things at Northwestern. Like my first internship was actually with an Ameriprise office where I was that behind the desk person. It was a free internship. It was just for credits. Like if it was raining, I'd be like, hey, can't come in, my stomach. I hated it, dude. And then I went to Northwestern. I was like, oh, I'm not in the office at all. I'm just going around and meeting people. Like, sure, sign me up.
But so, see, that was good for you to know, like, A, this is how David is wired. And then B, this is not for me. And see, I think the disconnect happens, and thanks for letting me interrupt you, but I think it's so key because, like, for instance, I got a DM last night from a colleague that he was talking about one of his mentees got a job offer, and she's contemplating the job offer. And is like, is this enough? I think I'm worth more than this. And I'm like, people don't get that the revenue or the upside potential in this business is associated with that very first avatar I talked about. And until you have like 10 years of experience plus, and depending on the firm and the channel, you may not even get to where you want to be from a compensation standpoint, because those are not as valuable to the business. It is what it is. And you have to understand, and I think you have to understand who you are. And if you're not that person, you need to be able to kind of adjust your lifestyle to what the value that role brings to the industry. Since this is something I teach students in my course, I love that Dave gives this advice on how you can change your introverted style into that rainmaker style that has the unlimited potential for financial rewards and influence in this industry. Here's his advice.
If someone's vision is large enough, right, if they have an income number, they have an impact scenario, they have something that they want to accomplish and they want that unlimited upside, but let's say they're naturally introverted. Mm-hmm. You can learn how to become extrovert. Like you can learn, like great salespeople, great advisors aren't born. They're made over time. So like, as an example, if someone, isn't comfortable talking to, people in that front facing capacity that we're referencing.
Yeah.
Well, what if every single day they went up to a stranger in the grocery store, in the elevator, wherever, and actually had a conversation of substance, not just a, hey, I like your shirt, or, hey, hope you have a good day, but like actually learn something about them. If they just did that every single day, just once a day, they're probably going to get a lot more comfortable in talking with people. So if your vision is big enough, you can morph your personality to be more in tune with the role that's going to get you the income needed to actually achieve whatever it is that you want to achieve. If you enjoy being that service-based advisor and you're okay with limiting your upside slightly, but it still checks the boxes that are important to you, by all means, go and do it.
Yeah.
Right. But just because you may not be naturally wired to be in one role or the other, doesn't mean that you can't rewire yourself through intentionality.
Now, in contrast to that, I wanted Dave to kind of talk about what I would call some of the misplaced expectations of new entrants into this industry after they get qualified or after they, become licensed to be financial advisors. His thoughts on this are very, very, very insightful. Take a listen.
So it's interesting because, people think that, oh, I'm an advisor now, or, oh, I have my CFP now, like, just going to sit here and look at my phone and it'll start ringing, right? Because well, I have my CFP or I have whatever, like,
yeah,
of course all my friends and family are going to trust me on day one, right? Of course, they're going to introduce me to all their friends and family. And that's just like not the case, right?
I love the way, I love that you're going this way and I didn't prompt you at all. I love it.
Well, it's just, it's silly, right? Like to think that, like and I'll go as far as to say to have your ego at a point where you think that people are just going to come to you because you're you is just craziness, right?
Or like, or the firm that you work for, right. Those founders, they had to do the same thing. I mean, clients just don't walk in off the street from from jump. So
when you first start at Northwestern, you have two focuses for like a decent amount of time until you're really good at them, because quite frankly, nothing else matters if you can't do these two things. And those two things are phoning and prospecting. If you can't get introduced to new people, and if you can't pick up the phone to those new people, call them and motivate them to spend some time with you, I don't care how good of a financial advisor you are or how well your portfolios are constructed or all the Monte Carlo analysis that's being done. Like, it's irrelevant if you have no one to bring through that process. Not just that, and I can't speak to every single firm in depth, but Northwestern specifically, you bring someone in the door through phoning and prospecting, you link up with a more seasoned advisor who can make sure from a financial planning perspective, it's done the right way. But again, if you spend all of your time, if you spend all of your time focused on putting together the best plan, but have no one to bring to the table, it's pointless knowledge.
Next, Dave drops a real nugget of wisdom when it comes to the difference between client experience and client service and the importance of each role inside of a firm to help deliver on that.
I don't know if it's important to know that process on the front end, but it's important to know in your role what your specific business development strategy is. Because just because you're a service advisor doesn't mean that you can't identify opportunity, right? So what I find a lot of times is that advisors create a client service model, right? Okay, we check in these times, here's what we talk about, blah, blah, blah. When instead, they should be creating a client experience model, right? So as an example, if I go to McDonald's and I order whatever, side note, I don't go to McDonald's, but...
Popeye chicken sandwich.
So if I go to McDonald's and I place an order and they get that order right, great service, good service, right? I asked for something, you got it for me. I'm not going and telling all my friends about that because I expect them to get my food right. right? But if I go to a restaurant and they walk me to my table, they pull out the chair. When I go to the restroom, they fold the napkin, they scrape off the table in between the courses, and then they go ahead and the chef comes out, asks how the meal is, and offers a dessert. That's an unbelievable experience. I'm probably going to tell other people about it. So you got to empower these service-based advisors to deliver an unbelievable client experience, so that when you either ask, what happens is you either ask for a referral, right? Because they say, hey, I know you brought up your son a handful of times, your sister a handful of times, whatever. Does it make sense for us to be talking to them? And they're like, yes, of course, because I want them to have the same experience. Or the introductions just come naturally and unsolicited because they can't help but tell other people about the unbelievable experience that they had in working with you. So it's not understanding what the front-end salesperson's business development strategy is. It's understanding, okay, your role on the team, what is your business development strategy? And it's through being aware and identifying opportunity, as well as bringing them through an unbelievable experience, not service.
Hey there, podcast listener. Are you a member of the Jumpstart community? Jumpstart is a collective of like-minded, aspiring financial professionals that are looking to do what it takes to enter the industry. There's a virtual mentorship Facebook group, a weekly email with tons of helpful tips and strategies, and so much more. If you're listening to this podcast, I know you'd be interested in the Jumpstart community. To join, make sure you text JUMP to 474747 to start receiving all that great content. Again, that's JUMP or the word jump to 474747. Now let's get back to this week's episode. Dave and I have coached dozens of advisors. I think together we're probably in the hundreds. So I wanted him to opine on what he sees as the biggest weakness of an advisor in their first 5 years of the business. This is what he had to say.
The biggest issue I see in the 0 to 5 year mark is people just aren't willing to go out and try stuff. Mm. Like I had a saying when I first started, like, and I got it from my mentor, where it's like, hey, I know you want to work with people up here, right? I know you want to work with this particular niche. Like, I appreciate that. But go and talk to anyone who can fog a mirror. Like, who cares if they have the money that you're able to manage or not? Just go and get reps in, right? Because that constant exposure to just having to have conversations with a wide variety of people is invaluable. Like, I thought I wanted to work with attorneys when I first started because their income was predictable if they worked at the big firms and they got bonused out and they were intelligent. And then I started working with attorneys and I'm like, nope. Personalities just didn't line up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if I spent all this time, right, and said, okay, my niche is going to be attorneys. I'm going to create all these videos for attorneys. I'm going to, prime my profiles for attorneys. And I spent all this work and then say that took, 3 months to do. And then I started meeting with attorneys and found out, oh, well, that was a big waste of time. Right. I'd rather go and meet with a bunch of people and get my reps in, get my language down pat, so that when I am in front of the people up here, my skill set is refined because I had so many at bats. That's the biggest issue I see in the first 5 years, is they're not willing to do that. There's so, and we don't have time to go through it all today, but like I have so many war stories.
I bet you do.
From my first 5 years of like,
we can do a whole podcast of just war stories of advisors.
Yeah, like situations that I was in or, conversations that I had where I look back and I'm like, oh my God, but like that all shaped me to do what I'm doing now because I had those at bats and some of those super weird conversations actually turned into something over time. But if I was closed-minded and only worked with a particular group of people, like I don't think that, an advisor who's under 5 years in the business has earned the right to pick one group of people to work with. They need to expose themselves to a bunch of different people and then figure out who gives them energy when they meet with them and who has the money to give them as well so that they can get compensated for that.
Yeah.
But your first 5 years, you're just going to go test out a bunch of stuff, have a bunch of conversations and keep your lights on. That's it.
Yeah.
And then from there, you can refine and scale.
As you know, I have a soft spot for all of my career changers out there. And I asked Dave to give 3 tips of wisdom for that potential aspiring advisor, financial professional that is a career changer. And this is what he had to say.
I mean, your first couple of steps would be to, you know, plan in advance, make sure that you give yourself, you know, 6 months of run room financially to be able to figure it out. I mean, I believe that, you know, you can always go and find another job, right? So if you give yourself, you know, that 6 months of financial run room to see if you can generate some revenue, mm-hmm. worst case scenario, just go get the job.
Yeah. I say 12 months, but yeah. 6 to 12 months.
Yeah. Absolute minimum of 6 months. And it depends, like if someone's single, right? Yeah. 6 months, someone's got, you know, a family, give yourself a year. Yeah. So, you know, circumstantial, but, so I would say number one is make sure that you give yourself an honest shot, because if you have financial stress as well as the stress of starting something new, you may experience paralysis by analysis, but if you can remove that financial anxiety, you can actually focus on growing, not focusing on, you know, making just enough to pay your bills.
No, that's good.
Right. So that would be number one. Number two is, let's say, you know, you worked in a tech company or something like that, and you then became an advisor. Don't automatically go to your tech community that you just spent 10, 15, 20 years with and appear as if you're this expert financial advisor or financial coach now. Make them aware of what you're doing, right? Keep them posted through social media, right? Let them know what it is that you're working on, but don't claim to be an expert because they just spent 15 years with you in a different field. For them to think that you're an expert overnight like that is just silly. And you may burn a lot of those relationships, whereas if you practice
patience, yeah, yeah,
right. Practice patience with that group of people. They'll become clients eventually. Just don't go in and you know, sever your relationships by selling. Make them aware. Okay, so that would be number two. And number three would be to find a mentor that's where you want to be, that can help you, because a mentor, they have every incentive for you to do well. So the advice that they give you isn't going to be detrimental to your growth or your vision. So whatever they share with you to do, just do that at 110%. Like, understand that like you're building something from zero and it's going to take a lot of work. And if you are willing to sacrifice, you know, those early years of working really hard, you enter this industry and you're overworked and you're underpaid. And then there's a shift to where you are overpaid and underworked because you built something that is recurring. Residual.
Yeah, you're right.
But if you're able to eat that you know what sandwich, right, for the first 5 years, it can be a very fruitful career path for sure.
Now, in what I do, I often see aspiring financial professionals putting the cart before the horse. And I love the advice Dave gives here about keeping the first things first when it comes to entering the industry. And I agree with him. Although I may be stepping on some toes out there, I still love you. This is what he had to say.
Not just that, but like, you know, those are obviously required to, you know, be an advisor, but like your CFP, for example, it's an incredible designation, but like that doesn't make you a better or worse salesperson. Like this job, like you're not an advisor when you enter this job, you are a marketer to create awareness around who you are, what you do, and who you serve. Yeah. You're a salesperson to be able to sell yourself and win the relationship of the person sitting across from you. And if you do those two things effectively, do you then have the opportunity to be an advisor? And your CFP doesn't hurt you by any means, but it doesn't help you on those first two things necessarily. So people are overly focused on the education piece of it, where it's like, you should be educating yourself on how to be a marketer and a salesperson. And once you have those things down pat, then learn to become a CFP.
Now, Dave consults with some pretty large clients, and so I asked him to kind of give a perspective on where EQ ranks in his mind and in the mind of those decision makers that he's coaching and consulting with.
Yeah, I would say that there's IQ can get you to a certain point. Having a great IQ and low EQ can get you to, you know, 100 million, 200 million in assets, but you end up plateauing. The EQ is what helps you go through that plateau, whatever that plateau is for you. So the people who have the billion-dollar firms or the ensemble practices or, you know, the people who are super influential within their community and have a great business, their EQ is through the roof compared to their IQ. Like some of the most successful people that I come across, I'm like, you're actually not that smart, but you're just really great with people, right?
They're good connectors. They know how to find what they need in their community.
Connectors, and then they have people on their teams
Yeah.
To help with the stuff that they're not good at. So that's a long-winded answer to saying, I agree with what you said.
Yeah, yeah. Now, as you know, I love if I have a chance to do a lightning round with my guests. And Dave had some really, really cool answers. So I wanted to feature what he talked about as the best financial advisor development program that he's seen or heard of, the number one skill that he thinks an advisor should continue to develop throughout their career, and what he's listening to and or reading right now in his knowledge library. Take a listen.
I've come across many advisors at many different firms who always bring up the fact that their training program is not good.
You're right. You're right.
I've yet to come across someone at Northwestern that says just went through training and it wasn't what I was expecting. it's always talking about how great the training is. So
yeah.
Without a doubt, they have the best training from a corporate perspective. And then obviously you have, you know, consulting companies like ours that, yeah, you know, supplement some of that stuff, but at the firm level, Northwestern, hands down. Learning with a smile on your face, meaning enjoying the process of learning and developing your skill set in all aspects of your life. So like before we started recording, we were talking about the fact that I'm running a marathon in a few days. The marathon isn't for any physical benefits for me whatsoever. I'm literally doing it to challenge my mind and to, you know, help get that extra mental fortitude to help me in other areas of my life. So if people can be a lifelong learner with a smile on their face, that would be the biggest skill set, because everything else kind of trickles into place from there. So podcast, I'm a big fan of Andy Frisella's podcast, The MF CEO Project.
Yeah,
disclaimer, he's colorful with his language. So just so everyone knows before they listen to it. So that would be from a podcast perspective.
Okay.
From a audiobook perspective, I'll share three audiobooks. Okay. So number one is Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. Talk about mental fortitude. It's unbelievable. Listen to that on Audible. Don't read it because it's more of an Audible/podcast setup. So they debrief the chapters in between, which is pretty cool.
Okay.
Another book is The Snowball System. The Snowball System basically talks about a way to sell through advancing relationships and adding value and not being salesy. And the other one is The Trusted Advisor. That's really good as well, where it shares with you how to become the trusted advisor through asking great questions and building trust and building rapport with the people that you're sitting across from. So those would be the three books and the one podcast that I would highly suggest.
I wanted to know what Dave is up to now. He's just recently taken a new position as president of the Model FA. And I wanted him to kind of talk about what the Model FA does and how you can connect with them. So I introduced you as the president of the Model FA. You and I have worked together for, I don't know, it's over a year. Maybe
close to two, bro.
Probably something like that. So talk about the Model FA, what's going on there, and how people can connect with the Model FA, what you're doing there, and who that audience is really for.
Yeah, so the Model FA is both a community and a company. So it's a community built for advisors by advisors. So like all of our coaches are still in the business, still licensed as advisors. So everything that we're sharing with our clients to implement is stuff that we're doing in practice as well. We work with anyone who's, you know, recently started all the way through. Our largest client is a $2.6 billion RIA, and we're working very deep with them. So what I would tell people is that if they go to our website, modelfa.com, there's a bunch of resources. It's a content-based website, similar to the content that you're producing, Dom, where it's just like, we're giving all the answers. You can do it, you know?
Or not.
We have audio, we have video, we have written stuff as well. But it's really helping advisors from a practice management perspective, marketing and branding perspective, creating a great client experience as well. And we offer a variety of programs, something that will fit anyone's budget typically. So, feel free to go check that out, modelfa.com.
If you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did, I'm sure you're gonna wanna check out some other ones. So make sure you click that link to the side. Also, make sure you subscribe to the channel. I would love to know what you thought about this conversation. So leave me a comment down below. If you wanna connect with Dave or the Model FA, make sure you check the show notes for their information, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Well, that wraps up this week's episode, and I hope you were able to glean at least one takeaway that will help you on your path. You know what? I'd really love to hear what it was that I said that may have helped you. Feel free to drop me an email at info@djh-capital.com. That's info@djh-capital.com. One last thing, my friend, it would really help the podcast if you would leave a review on the platform that you're enjoying it on. I'd really appreciate it, and it will help more financial professionals like yourself find out about what we're doing here. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.